Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Well, the Pro Farmer Estimate today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Today we'll spend the whole half hour with Pro Farmer's Chip Flory. He's fresh off the crop tour. Our panelists today are Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Gentlemen, let's open today's discussion with this question. How will Pro Farmer's 151.5 bushel to the acre, 10.86 billion bushel corn crop estimate impact the market Sunday evening and Monday morning? And we'll start with you, Wayne Nelson.
Well, that's a lot bigger number than what we were figuring they would come out with as we looked at their state-by-state statements each night and looking at it. It's a lot closer to the USDA. And I think with the number being bigger than what was expected, we're going to be down on Sunday night.
Chuck Shelby?
I think they're going to look at that number and say, well, it's pretty close to USDA. We're also kind of second-guessing, is USDA changing the way they do things? That's one question I'd like to ask Chip later on. So I don't know if it'll have a whole lot of impact being we're down today.
And Pete Manhart?
I think we were looking for bigger bean yields and about the same corn yields, truthfully. And I think we've already started the down movement on Thursday on beans and today on corn. And I think, if anything, we'll be sideways to lower into harvest now. We tried the bounce this week, and I don't know that we got any bounce left until after harvest.
And we're going to do things just a little bit differently today. We're going to bring Chip Flory into the conversation early. Chip, same conversation question for you. How will your numbers impact the market Sunday night, Monday?
You know, I really don't think it's going to have much of an impact at all. There might have been an attitude that the number was going to be a little bit below that. When we talk about the John Deere Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour and the yield findings or the yield estimates that we find each day on a state-by-state basis, we've got to really watch how you use those numbers. We know that those numbers will be wrong when we compare it to USDA's final number. We know that because we've been doing it since 1993. We've been doing it the same way, and we know how much we traditionally or consistently miss by in each of those states, okay? So when, for example, Iowa came out at 145 bushels per acre from the crop tour, a year ago we were right at 145 bushels per acre. That year to year, that's a steady crop. That's a steady crop. USDA on August 1 was 173 bushels per acre in Iowa. This year they started off on August 1 at 173 bushels per acre. So year to year, USDA is unchanged. That tells me that the crop tour and USDA were looking at exactly the same crop out there in Iowa. So steady to year to year. I look primarily at the percentage changes in the yield for corn. That's primarily what I look at. Kind of ignore the number altogether and just look at the percentage change. The big one that kind of scared me this year was Indiana being steady versus USDA adding about 13 bushels to their crop. That's the one that scares me a little bit.
Hey, Chuck, Chip, would you do this for me? Because I know there's a difference between these two. Explain the difference between the crop tour findings and the 151.5, which is a pro farmer number.
Exactly. That's exactly right, Todd. Now, the crop tour will go out, and we've done it, like I said, we've done it the same way since 1993, and it was done before that by some other guys. But since 1993, we've done it the same way, and like I said, we consistently know how much we will miss by in each state. The numbers that you see from the crop tour are just the raw data. There's no analysis done to it whatsoever. We drive down the road, we pull our samples, we measure the grain length in inches, count the kernel rows around, count our ear populations out there in the field, and measure the row width in the field. Those are the numbers that go into our spreadsheet. Now, the spreadsheet was done by the University of Illinois years and years and years ago. The reason that we use that yield estimate, and we continue to use that yield estimate, and we are hesitant, very hesitant, to update and go to something different, is because as soon as we do, we have to throw out everything that we've done in the past. And that back data and the consistency that we've used on the tour from year to year is what I think makes the tour extremely valuable. It allows us to look at the year-to-year changes in those crops and apply that similar percentage change to USDA's August 1 numbers or to last year's numbers, and we can come up with a number that's going to be pretty close in the end, usually will be pretty close in the end.
So your state-to-state numbers generally are low, but your and those are the findings, but the
right.
profile, and that would be the crop tour
the
findings.
Crop tour. Yeah.
But the pro farmer estimate
consistently low,
10 to 15% or more.
Yeah.
And the pro farmer estimate has been how accurate in the past?
You know, we leading up to 2004, it was really really good, and then in 2004, you know, that heavy corn that we measured out there came on, and we were light. And then last year, same story. Illinois fooled the heck out of us for one thing, and we were light on our estimate last year. But we do go through and we apply analysis to the crop tour data that we find. We look at states outside the tour areas, and we come up with state-by-state yield estimates. For example, you know, I said that Indiana came in steady year-to-year, but we think there are some other things out there going on. And USDA obviously saw something. And let's face it, those guys do it every day of every year. Work on the numbers and trying to get the crop just right. We go out and we do it for a week, you know, and we've got a bunch of guys that do things very well. They work very hard. We do things consistently so that we know that we end up with some numbers that we can actually use and make some meaningful comparisons to the previous year. But we do this for a week out of every year. So you've got to trust some, and you've got to use those USDA August 1 numbers and just apply some trend changes or some trend deviations, I should say, and try to come up with what the number is that we think it's going to be. So we put Indiana at 159 bushels per acre this year, and hopefully it's going to have a favorable finish to get there, guys.
Hey, Chip, just offhand, those other guys that you brushed off earlier from 93 and before, I was in that crew, so I take that a little personally.
I didn't mean that.
No, it was Illinois Farm Bureau, if I remember right. They ran that, and Jim Quinton and company.
Exactly. Yeah. Jim Quinton was with us up in in Worthington, Minnesota on the crop tour this week, and we had a great visit. We talked for a while and got to introduce him to the group as one of the guys that kept it going after the Illinois Farm Bureau decided not to do it anymore.
Chip, after doing this for quite a few years, as you just kind of mentioned at the end there, we got a few weeks to grow and go in the growing season here. Give us your view on the corn and the beans. How much improvement can we see, or is this crop kind of flatlined here, do you believe, in your opinion?
Yeah. The corn, I have never seen a crop this mature in the third full week of August on any tour I've ever done. I was not in a field from Sioux Falls to Grand Island to Nebraska City, to Worthington, to Owatonna, that was not dented. Everything was dented, in the many cases, full dent with the milk line half down. Now, when you're in Minnesota at this time of the year, you just soon see that crop in mid-dough, maybe late dough, but give it a little bit more time to finish off with some cooler temperatures, get some of those late summer showers coming through, those kind of conditions that just slow things down and move as much dry matter into the kernels as we possibly can. But that's not going to happen. We saw corn that is in that was dented, and it looks to me like it's a 56-pound crop across the corn belt. I just don't know how we're going to get up to a 60-pound crop this year. And that 5 bushels is, or 4 bushels, whatever, is a heck of a lot when we're talking about what it means to yield.
Chip, you said there was some extenuating circumstances and things you looked at in Indiana. Mm-hmm. I'm over there in Indiana, and I was just wondering what it was that you looked at that was so different there.
Yeah, it got dry late. there are some pockets over there. Roger Bernard led the tour on the eastern leg of the tour this year, and when I talked with him, he was in an area north of Indy that said he just pulled three stops and couldn't get over 80 bushels per acre on his yield estimates, and so he was in an area that was just got too dry at the wrong time, some tip back on those ears, and his populations were down a little bit, and I think that goes back to some early season problems with some too much water at the start of the year. We just had some real tough conditions out there trying to get that crop established in some of those areas. So there were more nicks on that Indiana crop than I think a lot of people believed from the very beginning, and as a result, they're really starting to show up now. You know, we talk about this 51.5 bushel per acre number that we put out. Like I said, we've run the analysis against the crop tour numbers. We've put some interpretation as far as what we think this crop is going to weigh and so on. One thing that I left out was we did adjust some acres to get the number to come up with our production estimate then at 10.862. South Dakota, we left at 100 bushels per acre, which is what USDA had the crop at on August 1, but we took 400,000 acres out of the harvested acreage mix. So obviously, if you take the worst out and only keep the best, it's going to hold your average yield up in the state. But we wanted to take those 400,000 acres out because South Dakota is a mess. Plain and simple, it's an absolute mess.
Peter, after the USDA report, kind of in our area, the feeling was that would be the largest corn number. And yeah, the smallest bean number. Is that kind of the feeling you have at your firm?
Yeah, I think it probably is. You know, 152.2, we always say that the crop estimate that we put out at this time of the year is plus or minus 1%. That gives us a little bit of wiggle room so that we can zero in on things a little bit as we finish filling the crop and so on and get into the harvest season. Gives us some room to wiggle around. And I believe, I haven't actually done the math on this, believe it or not, but I believe if you put 1% onto 151.5 bushels per acre, you're going to be pretty close. You're going to be pretty close to 152.2 bushels per acre. So that's at the top end. So obviously, yes, I think that yield estimate that we got on August 1 was probably the big number of the year, and we're just going to have to slide it down a little bit from there.
Now,
soybeans, I think it's just the opposite. Like you said, Wayne, I think we're probably going to see this the bean crop estimate go up. The reason there is pretty simple. In five of the seven states that we toured, there is adequate soil moisture to finish off the crop. And I don't care what the conditions were leading up to it. If you get mud on your boots during the crop tour, the bean crop's going to be better than anybody thinks. That's plain and simple. That's how important water at this time of the year is to that bean crop. And there's adequate moisture in most states. The exceptions are Ohio and Indiana. Our soil moisture rating came in under a 3 on our scale, on our 1 to 6 scale. And whenever we have a soil moisture index under 3 on the crop tour, we typically see the yield in that state trend down a little bit into the end of the year.
We better get some other numbers in here along the way, too. Let's give the numbers on the weekly trade this week. Corn traded from a high of 228 and a quarter to a low of 218 and a half in the day trade in the overnight. And they settled up 5.25 cents for the September, $2.25. December futures at 241 and three quarters were up 6 cents from last week. September soybeans this week, 555 and a half, a low at 542. Their settlement price at 543. They were up 4. The November beans, making a new contract low on Friday and finished at 557. They were up 3.5 cents from last week. What did the crop tour number, the pro farmer number, keep that straight, pro farmer number show for national yield on Friday afternoon?
On soybeans,
yes.
We put it at 40.9 bushels per acre. That'd give us a crop at 3.023 billion bushels. So pretty good crop out there, guys. Even in the Western Belt where we were worried about the impact of the drought all year, that bean crop held on to its yield potential. Started to get the rains around August 1, added some yield potential at that point. Started to fill those pods, and that Western bean crop really looks good to me. Might even end up being a little bit better than some of the guys out east.
You know, I know you probably haven't paid as much attention this week to the marketplace as you normally would, given that you're out in the field. What'd you make of today's contract low in the bean pit for the Novembers?
We're not done yet. I think that market's probably going to continue to go down here for a little while. You know, honestly, guys, I don't care if the number's going to be a 39, if it's going to be a 40, 41, 42. The bottom line is we're going to have too many beans, and carryover's going up in the 06, 07 marketing year. We need to find some more demand for this market, and really the only way that we're going to find enough demand in the 06, 07 marketing year is if we go down and find it by taking the price down, and I think that's something that we're probably going to have to do and get that process. If we can get that process started now instead of waiting until later, that's good news because we'll build that demand that much quicker.
Chuck, you agree with that? Are we going lower yet in the bean pit, and what kind of lows are you looking for?
We certainly dipped under some long-term support that we've been watching closely on a continuation chart. In the past, we've popped back up above it, but technically you got to look at this today and say it's not really the kind of performance we're looking for. We did watch the September contracts going off, the options going off today. We thought that was a little bit of an impact there. But if you don't hold here, you can break down to 525 area if you can't get something going back to the plus side Monday, Tuesday.
Pete?
Yeah, I think we're continuing on down. You know, we're going to have a bigger crop than expected. We've got harvest coming on, and we still have a bigger carryover. The things about down the road, though, I think we're looking at lows now and into through harvest, but I think we've got to look at the world situation. Who's going to plant what next year? If we're going to plant more corn and South America's going to plant less beans, where are they going to go next year? So you might want to think about that in your marketing strategy.
I bet you talked about that in the cars as you were traveling along over the last week. Is that right, Chip?
Oh, absolutely. And that's an awesome point that you just made. We've got to keep a close eye on what's going to happen in that South America market. And we had someone from AgriConsult out of Brazil with us. Fabio was with us on the crop tour this year. We had a couple of crop analysts out of Argentina that came on the crop tour this year. Mexico was represented. Canada was represented. Japan was represented on the crop tour this year. And obviously, we spent as much time talking to Fabio from Brazil as we possibly could, trying to figure out what's going to happen in the year ahead. The currency is the thing that's killing them, guys. You know, that thing has basically cut their bean price in half since over the last 4 years. And until we see some kind of a turnaround in that currency, it's just going to be really, really difficult for those Brazilian growers to get their feet back on the ground financially and start to produce a big crop again. And financing is obviously the big thing, the key thing, because they've got to fertilize every acre that they put out there in beans. They've got to protect it with fungicides at least once, probably twice, maybe three times, and could even have to do it four times. So their cost of production has gone up considerably. Transportation costs obviously are going up for them. So righting the financial ship in Brazil is probably the most important thing, just in the general economy, is probably the most important thing that has to happen for those Brazilian growers before we can really start to anticipate a big crop coming out of Brazil again.
Where did Fabio farm? How many hectares? And is he?
No, Fabio is actually with AgriConsult. It's a consulting firm out of Brazil. Guillermo, I can't think of Guillermo's last name right now, but he's kind of the head guy down there. Has been on the tour before as well, and it's a well-respected group down there. They're looking for about a 10% reduction in Brazilian soybean acres this year.
We've talked to a couple guys that said, 6,000 to 8,000 acres they farm, they're going to plant 1,500 to 2,000 because of they just are losing money.
Wow!
They're not going to plant the rest; it's going to lay barren.
But doesn't that an interesting situation? If we're going to try to limit production here, it just sets up for a long-term pretty positive situation when you keep pushing those acres down.
Won't they plant sugarcane on some of those acres instead of the beans?
No. Too much transportation cost, these guys told us.
Is that what they told you, Chip?
Yeah, well, I think cotton might be an option on some of those acres. They're really down on their wheat acres this year. Brazil's a big wheat importer for us. And it looks like they're probably going to move up into the number two slot or maybe just the number three slot for wheat imports out of the U.S. this year because they didn't plant their wheat this year either. They just don't have their financial book in order, there's years to come. Think about it this way, guys. The price of Brazilian ground has basically been cut in half in 2 years. And I don't care if it's developed ground or underdeveloped ground. Generally speaking, the price of land down there has been cut in half. That sound familiar to anybody?
You know, like 1980. Yeah.
They're going through something that this country has gone through already. We did it 25 years ago instead of doing it today, and it's going to take time for them to recover, just like it took our economy, our farm economy to recover, and unfortunately for the Brazilian growers, the recovery is going to be even tougher. And I think Pete nailed one of the reasons. It's the transportation. They just can't get that crop out of the interior and to the export locations or processing locations fast enough to make it worth anything.
Let me ask you a different question because I don't know the answer to this question, but I'm going to guess that it didn't happen. Why would it be that they would stop planting acres of beans? I don't think we did that in the U.S. We didn't stop planting corn or soybeans or wheat or anything.
No net. They're just losing money.
Exactly.
Chip, as you were driving across the country, did you notice a lot of new grain bins? I know in our area there's been a lot of grain bins go up for more storage out there to put this crop on.
Exactly, and you guys are in an area where grain bins were kind of taboo for a while because, you know, basis is usually pretty good over there.
Mm-hmm.
So you just use the basis, capture the carry of the market if there's anything there by using commercial storage or just take advantage of the basis that you've got offered for spot delivery, so on. Think about where the grain bins really have been built over the last few years, in northern Iowa, southern Minnesota, up into South Dakota, where basis has been poor, and it's been very difficult for these guys in those areas to take advantage of any carry in the market. But I tell you, Roger Bernard, who led the Eastern Tour, talked about shiny new grain bins all over the place in the Eastern Belt.
Or at least rings on the bottoms of the old ones, one of the two.
Exactly. Hey, there's so much movement that I saw a grain bin being moved, and when they pulled the top off the thing with a crane, they just decided, you know, that'd probably be a pretty good way to move it. And they were going down the road with this thing hanging off a cable, the top of a grain bin, hanging off a cable on a crane. It's crazy. Guys are trying to get this stuff done as fast as they can and get ready for, and boy, what are they going to store? Are they going to store their beans or store their corn?
Well, hey, there's the other question, and Chuck brought that up earlier, that if the Brazilians are not going to plant as many acres or hectares, depending on how you want to say it, this year, then the price of beans and the price of corn are both going to be competing pretty heavily, I would think,
right.
Don't you?
Well, if you're storing beans, you're speculating. If you're storing corn this year, you're trying to take advantage of something that the market is offering you. Because if you're storing beans, you're going to speculate that the price is going to go up enough to cover your cost of storage, so on and so forth, et cetera, et cetera. If you're going to store corn, what you're doing is you're going to try to capture the premium that's in those, or the carry that's in the markets out there into the May contract, the July contract, whatever flavor you want to sell it into. And then while you're doing that, obviously, you're looking for some basis recovery along the way as well. So storing corn is the play that everybody has talked about. Everybody that I've talked to says that they're just going to store corn, and the beans are going to come out of the field, go on the truck, and move to town. That's what everybody has told me so far this year.
Well, you talked about the South Dakota area being so devastated, and if we talk a little bit about the acreage going up in corn next year, will those guys with financial difficulties and the price of wheat, I would think they wouldn't want to touch corn out there when you see the market, what it looks like today against the new crop wheat prices.
Yeah. You know, when we travel around out there on the John Deere Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour, when we, after day one on the Western Tour, we end up in Grand Island. We get to Grand Island, there's going to be about 80 farmers from the area that are going to come in and meet with us, and we just sit and have dinner. Might have a favorite beverage of our choice or two and talk about conditions in that area. And when we got to Grand Island, believe it or not, we could talk about increased wheat acres. It was very interesting. And see, wheat acres, I think, have already done their job to buy enough or to buy acres for 07. Heck, they've even done their job to buy acres for 08. And that's going to make it pretty difficult to get some acres away from it and back into corn, I think.
Well, that's another question. I'm going to stop you there. If wheat exports aren't so good, does that cap the top side of the corn market at all?
If wheat exports aren't so good, does it cap the corn market?
I've had some analysts suggest that the wheat market, because wheat exports have lagged.
Right. Yeah. The price of wheat is it's going to have an impact on the corn market. I think that's what was going on earlier this week when the scouts were going through Illinois, and everybody was talking about, you know, corn was up 4 cents or whatever it was, and trying to give some credit to the crop tour for that. You know, wheat was also up that day and probably was up stronger than what the corn market was. It was probably support from the wheat market that was pulling corn higher. But if we cap off this wheat market a little bit, it'll cap the corn market off as well. So,
Chip, you said that everybody is going to store corn and everybody's going to ship beans. Generally, the masses are wrong. Does that mean we should probably store beans?
When we ended up in Minnesota, I said, I'll use this example because with all the lakes up here, you guys will understand this. If that's the play, let's just imagine everybody moving to one side of the canoe. And what happens when that happens? The canoe usually tips over. And so we got to be aware of that. You got to watch for signals that the corn storage play is not going to work or something that is going to change. To make that strategy the wrong strategy for marketing your corn, your 06 crop corn. But right now, everything that I see tells me, you know, the carry in the market, the chance for the opportunity for a basis recovery as the demand starts to eat through the 06 crop, all things are lined up and telling me that is the play.
Will the increase come in basis, the board, or both?
I think first it'll come in basis because your cash market is going to be your first market to reflect that we're actually working through those 05 crop supplies, you know, the old carryover, that we're getting through that and we're starting to chew through the 06 crop. This, as the cash market and your cash merchandisers realize that they've got to go out and book some more grain, get some on board, that basis should start to firm up. So I think we'll see our signal that the price recovery or price strength is coming back to the market when we see that basis come back, reflecting a tighter situation out in the country.
Hey, Chip, thanks much. We appreciate it a lot today.
You bet. Thank you, guys.
Good hearing from you.
Chip Flory with Pro Farmer joining us just fresh off of the John Deere Pro Farmer Crop Tour and bringing us the Pro Farmer estimates. And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Now time for a final word from our panelists. And we'll start with you, Wayne Nelson.
Well, there's some bigger numbers than we were expecting to come out of the crop tour, and they finally analyzed things, Todd. And I think it looks like we've got a heck of a bean crop ahead of us.
Chuck Shelby.
Harvest isn't that far away, and so if you need that storage space, I know we're making plans, but it's not that far away.
And Pete Manhart.
Be careful out there getting ready for harvest, and once you start, be careful on the harvest to get that in where it belongs.
Something to keep in mind, next week our Daily Ag programming will come to you live from the AgriGold tent at the Farm Progress Show in Amana, Iowa. Drop by and see Dave Dickey, Ed Kieser, and myself, among other panelists, including Pete Manhart.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.